Hi everyone, this is Sumati Rajput from the Crisis and Disaster Risk Finance Program at the World Bank Group, and you are listening to Women in Disaster Risk Finance, a podcast series dedicated to women around the world working toward enabling faster and more reliable financial response in countries affected by climate shocks, disasters, and crises. In recent years, we are seeing over $200 billion in annual economic losses from natural disasters. The COVID-19 pandemic and the economic crisis that it has brought may cause over 1.4% of the world's population to fall into extreme poverty, with the total number of extreme poor rising to 150 million in 2021. The importance of financial planning has never before been more obvious. Welcome everyone to the first episode of our podcast series, Women in Disaster Risk Finance. Today we're in conversation with Rachel Turner, the Director of International Finance at the UK Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office. Previously, Rachel served as the Director for Economic Development and before that was the Director for East and Central Africa, overseeing DFID's programs in the region. She has over 20 years of experience working in developing countries in Africa and Eastern Europe and has been a strong champion for building momentum on risk finance globally. Hi, Rachel. Welcome. It's a real honor to have you here with us today and really to have this conversation mark the launch of the Women in Disaster Risk Finance series. So really, thank you so much for joining.
Hi Sumati, thank you so much for inviting me. This is a subject that is really dear to my heart and I'm excited to be able to talk about it with you.
Thanks, Rachel. So I'm as excited as you are really to get this conversation started. And of course, the topic that we're going to talk about is very exciting itself. We've seen so much happen on risk finance in the last decade. You know, there's a lot of global momentum around this topic with the coming about of the Insure Resilience Global Partnership in 2017, the discussions that the UK has been leading for several years, but more recently also on the G7, and all that's going on also on the road to COP in Glasgow later this year. So really, I mean, this is at the heart of the climate, development, and humanitarian agendas. And you, of course, have been at the forefront of it all. So to get us started, it would be really interesting for our listeners to hear about your story when it comes to risk finance, how you got associated with the topic, and really what your journey has been so far.
Marty, thanks for that introduction. And yes, we were very pleased to be able to put this agenda right at the front of the G7 and also it's a core objective as we move towards the COP in November. But my experience actually working in development for many, many years has given me many ways in which I've been able to really become very convinced that delivering on disaster risk finance is absolutely essential to how we approach our partnerships with developing countries. My background originally in my career was as an economist. And when I think back to your question, the experience that really jumps out for me was the work I did really in the late 1990s, working with African governments and supporting them in their engagements with the IMF, actually. And over that time, an increasing frustration that the international community was not sufficiently alive to the fact that shocks, and often climate-related and disaster-related shocks, hit developing countries year in, year out. And that was not a surprise. And I remember in 2001, I had to choose a subject for my promotion board. And the subject I chose was shocks and not surprises. And I have this really vivid memory of the night before my promotion board, walking up and down my kitchen, holding my baby. I just had a son, my second son, rehearsing my presentation on the fact that shocks are not surprises and why the international system at the time had not recognized that. And the entire system at the time was set up on the basis of linear assumptions about how growth and macro reform and macro profiles happen. And so that experience as an economist, seeing the, if you like, the failure to actually plan ahead for shocks at the macro level, made me increasingly frustrated. But I was also successful in my promotion. And I think, you know, from that day forward, I've had that kind of mantra in my head, if you like, that shocks should not be surprises. And I think anyone working with developing country communities knows, of course, that developing country households live and breathe shocks and planning for shocks. You know, developing country households, women and men and developing countries, they wake up in the morning thinking about risk and shocks, and they go to bed at night thinking about risk. And I think, you know, I've had such an opportunity in my career to work both at the sort of macroeconomic level and then at the household level, and seeing the way those two different parts of the system think about or don't think about risk has really, really driven me to be very passionate about the disaster risk agenda, because it's the piece that brings those two together. And I think, you know, finally, I guess my experience working on humanitarian issues, particularly in the Horn of Africa, and when I was leading our program in Mozambique, also gave me a lot of confidence that many, many developing country governments have the capacity to build their own systems, their own shock responsive social protection systems, for example, to manage crisis. And what's so exciting about disaster risk is that you can bring that drive for governments to have their own systems, their own capabilities to deliver support for shocks through robust social protection systems. You can link that through to the macroeconomic. And I think those are the, you know, you asked me what had inspired me on my passion for disaster risk. And I think it is the fact that I've seen these issues from both ends, if you like. And I'm so sort of clear in my own mind that disaster risk finance is what can join those two parts of the system together in the right way.
Thanks, Rachel. That's absolutely inspirational. I'm totally taken by the phrase that you've just coined, which is shocks should not be surprises. And I couldn't agree with that more. I think that should be kind of a tagline for how we work. And it's also very inspirational to hear, you know, the way that you've navigated your journey, balancing different aspects of life, which I think often go unnoticed, right? When all you're doing is standing up in front of the big stage and making speeches, and there's so much happening at the back. But of course, very fascinating to hear about all your country-related work. I think something that you mentioned, which is absolutely critical when it comes to risk finance, is really thinking of the different dimensions that you highlighted, right? Which are thinking about it from the different lenses, be it in the macro space, be it in the social protection space, and how it all kind of fits together and how we need to think about it together to really make sure that shocks are not surprises. So Rachel, if picking up on this and going to kind of the next question that I have for you, really, I mean, you've highlighted some of your personal milestones, but if you had to look more globally, in the last, you know, couple of decades, as you said, you know, we've seen when you started in this space, countries were not thinking about these as at the forefront, even though they think about it when they go to bed and they go to sleep. I guess the global community wasn't catching speed in the same way. So what would you say are two key highlights, you know, that got us to where we are today, and two key challenges that you see that lie ahead for the global community?
Yeah, no, thanks. And, it's hard, I think, to choose those two highlights. I think for me personally, I think one of the highlights was setting up Africa Risk Capacity with other partners. I remember taking that investment case to our then minister, and it was a tough process to explain what the Africa Risk Pool was, how we'd designed an ecosystem around the risk pool, why we should be putting our own capital at risk, which we did, into the risk pool. But But, you know, a personal highlight for me was when the Africa Risk Pool was established with the ecosystem around it to support African countries to begin to move their risk from their balance sheets to the international capital market balance sheets. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about disaster risk, but fundamentally, what we're doing is moving risk from developing countries to the international capital markets to absorb that risk. So setting up the Africa Risk Pool was, for me, it was a highlight, actually. And of course, there had been risk pools before, but that was key to me. And I think the fact that there were early payouts in the Sahel and seeing the way those payouts happened quickly and immediately started to flow through systems, reaching poor people, seeing that ecosystem work for Africa was a highlight for me. I think another highlight is maybe less specific, but something I love to see. I love to see how this more and more sophisticated risk modeling is starting to build from what communities themselves know and understand about risk. And I think seeing the way the modelers are beginning to build their models based on information about risk that is partly coming from communities' deep knowledge and understanding of risk, I think that's really exciting as well. So I think those are two of my highlights. You know, the challenges are hard. I think particularly now in this pandemic year when there's such a high need for resource right now, it is so difficult for finance ministries to put money aside to cover themselves for future risk. And I know that sounds counterintuitive when you're in the middle of a big risk event. You'd think the case would be stronger, but the pressures on budgets are so high. And we understand that. I think we feel that with our own programming to think about contingency and holding money back for future events when the needs are high. It is a really, really difficult thing to do. It's a difficult thing for the executive in governments. It's a difficult decision for politicians. They have to defend those decisions. And it is a challenge. I mean, I think, honestly, I think there's also a challenge in the humanitarian sector to really also embrace these new ways of working. And, you know, it's been quite a long journey, I would say, with the humanitarian sector to begin to recognize that disaster risk finance is, it's not a threat, but it's a way to allow the humanitarian sector to focus on, you know, those countries that are most vulnerable, that are least capable of beginning to put in place their own risk management systems and focus on those most vulnerable. And I think we're still on a journey there, actually. So I think those are two of the challenges ahead. But I also feel very confident. And I think, you know, we were proud to lead that work in the G7 this year. And it was really interesting to me how the conversation has moved, even in the last 2 years, actually, the conversation has moved on a lot. So yes, there are challenges. And the modeling is a challenge. You know, your models need to be sophisticated. You need models for different crops, different weather zones, different, you know, different flood risks. It's difficult, but it's hugely important, Smadi.
Yeah, no, Rachel, I mean, that's fascinating. And I have so many questions that I'm going to already reserve the right to come and talk to you the next time I'm in London, because I'd love to learn more about how ARC was set up. And since you've been so central to the journey, I think it's something that, you know, the global community can be really proud of. And really, there's so much to unpack. I think the challenges that you highlighted are fundamental, really, to look toward. Be it in terms of modeling, be it in terms of the global policy related challenges when it comes to how finance ministers are struggling to kind of make ends meet on one hand, where there's all these competing priorities, but at the same time, they need to think about how to plan for the future. And like you said, the humanitarian community, I mean, linking this to really the front runners of response is absolutely essential for us to make response quicker and more reliable. So, I mean, on that note, I would love to hear a little more on what you think the vision of the future of risk finance could be, you know, one that could perhaps address or resolve some of these challenges to the extent possible, and also what the global community can actually do to get closer to achieving that vision.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's hard, isn't it, to right now to think ahead with so much happening in the midst of the pandemic. But I guess I would start with the social protection part of the story, actually. And I do feel that part of the vision has to be a much stronger coverage of what we, you know, what we call in the system shock responsive social protection, and mechanisms for money to flow to reach the poorest when there are shocks. And I feel quite strongly that that sort of, if you like, that bedrock, that underlying system needs to be sort of almost, you know, it absolutely needs to be, you know, not necessarily the first part of our vision, but an absolute foundation of our vision. I think then, you know, I think the next part of the vision is just about the fact that we can begin to track how much climate risk, how much disaster risk is covered by disaster risk arrangements. And those, you know, that we don't yet have a global report that tells us every year, this is how much risk is covered. And I think it's something we've been talking about in the G7, that we really need to move towards a much more visible statement every year of how the system is progressing. And we need a report, or we need a piece of the architecture that is also reminding everybody about how much risk is modeled and modelable. And so I think part of my vision is that people know, finance ministers know, teams in the IMF know, teams in the World Bank know, my economists know. They know what kind of risks are known and modelable and what the tail risks are. And when they're in the room with colleagues in finance ministries particularly, they're comfortable, they're talking about it. They're saying, you know, you can model for this risk, you can cover for this risk. And that people are increasingly confident about that. And then, of course, the vision is that the tools are there to allow countries to do that. And I do feel something we discussed in the G7, Sumati, about this future vision was about, as donors, as international partners, we should be willing to share the costs of some of the, what we call the premium subsidies in the insurance sector, some of the fees associated with some of the contingent debt instruments, that we should be prepared to help share in those costs, particularly as countries become more comfortable. It will take them time. And on that journey, we should be prepared to share in some of those fees and those costs. And that's something in the G7 we've committed to do. And again, we're working on principles to make that happen. So lots of parts to that vision. I, you know, the key thing, Samadhi, is that we keep moving forward, I think, and mm-hmm. that we don't get stuck. And I think particularly as we emerge from a health crisis, we mustn't put all our efforts into only planning for a future health shock. We must keep recognizing day in, day out, I guess, that other shocks will hit communities, will hit countries, will hit sovereign governments, as well as future health shocks, and that we keep those conversations very live.
Thanks, Rachel. No, indeed, the vision of this field is not an easy one, so I tasked you with, I posed quite a difficult question to you. If I may probe just a little bit on this, you know, obviously, a lot of programs have been set up with this sort of idea in mind, with this vision in mind. And you've obviously, you know, overseen the Global Risk Finance Facility quite closely, as well as perhaps many other programs that the UK is currently managing and financing. If you had to maybe in 30 seconds tell me, you know, what the role of some of these programs can be or should be within this space, that would be quite interesting for us to hear.
There are a lot, and I think we're at this phase where, you know, often when a kind of new way of thinking about an issue begins to grow, you do see quite a proliferation of programs, and that can make the system and the architecture feel a little bit confused. But I think, honestly, I think it's fine. I think having different programs is quite healthy, different ways of building and looking at things. So a few of the programs, I mean, one of the things that we're very proud of in the UK is the Centre for Disaster Protection that we set up. It's a small team, but we've set it up in the UK as a centre of expertise, if you like, on this issue. And, you know, we're very privileged in the UK to have great skills in the financial sector in the UK and the insurance sector in the UK. So we've set it up here partly because we've been able to bring in some of those really exciting modelling skills. We've also been able to form a very exciting partnership with the bit of the UK government that helps the UK government think about risk and model risk. And so that's been very important for us, that we bring in that practical capacity from the UK government into that centre. The GRIF, the facility that the World Bank hosts, that we in Germany support, has been hugely important in helping World Bank teams, particularly IDA teams, begin to think about how to embed disaster risk financing in IDA programming. And we've seen some really exciting and novel ideas going forward. We're also, of course, doing programming that isn't just for IDA. And we're also very pleased to be working with the Africa Bank now. There's a program called ADRIFI, set up now with the Africa Bank, which is really getting off to a great start and is supporting African governments in their interaction with ARC, but also with the capital markets. And that's a program where we're beginning to use premium subsidy to support the most vulnerable African countries. So those are three programs that we're very pleased in pleased to support and are seeing good progress, as well, of course, as the risk pools that I spoke about at the beginning, Sumathi.
Yeah, no, it's incredible the amount that's happening in this space, and also the UK's leadership in designing, navigating kind of how these things come about. Definitely, I think there's, like you said, you know, having a lot of programs is not necessarily a bad thing in any way, because it just there's just so much to be done, and every partner brings a specific set of technical skills and expertise. I think the launch of the center that you mentioned, that was a few years ago, has definitely been something that's quite transformational, and all the other operational programs that you talked about seem to be very well received by our country clients, because there's just ever-growing demand, at least from what we see at the bank. So I think that's a very heartening future to look forward to. So Rachel, perhaps my last question to you is a little bit more of an inspirational one, since we started on an inspirational note. You know, of course, you know, you've been following probably the recent events, even in Germany, where there's a lot of flooding at the moment. And it just highlights this issue that the climate problem is really, it remains a global problem, even though we see a lot of the brunt on the developing world. But there's a lot of work to be done there, and there's a lot of space to basically act early. So if there was one message or, you know, a key piece of advice that you wanted to send to everybody listening, be it in the developed world or the developing world, what would you tell them?
Well, I guess I said it at the beginning, and sorry to sound a bit boring by repeating what I said at the beginning, but I guess, you know, I guess it is this phrase, shocks and not surprises, and I do feel so strongly about that, and I do continue to be disappointed, actually, at how hard it is to embed that way of thinking. But I think if everybody can really approach development with that mantra, then I do think that we'll begin to shift how we think and how we behave and how we organize our money.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love this tagline, like I said at the beginning, and we'll try to credit you, but we might use it. So, Rachel, thank you so much for talking to us today. We're at the end of our time here, but it's really been a pleasure to actually hear about your experiences, learn about the evolution of this space from someone who's been, you know, part of the journey from right from the beginning. And it's really fascinating to hear your take on where we should be going from here. Really, you know, these things are difficult to predict, but like you said, if we can work around them, then they don't need to be surprises. So thank you so much for taking the time and for, you know, giving us some inspirational advice for the future. We're also really lucky to have had you launch the Women in Disaster Risk Finance podcast series and to have your voice really come out here. So thank you so much. And we hope we can invite you again in the future for subsequent episodes of this.
No, well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And, you know, there are loads of women doing extraordinary work in this area. And I really look forward to listening to the rest of the series. Thank you, Smarty.
Thank you so much, Rachel. Today's podcast would not have been possible without the technical contributions of the Learning and Knowledge Management team at the Crisis and Disaster Risk Finance Program and the Global Risk Financing Facility at the World Bank Group. We would like to thank Aditya Babu Upadhyay and Harish Ravi Chandran for the production of this podcast. We would also like to thank Rachel Turner, Nicola Jens, and Nicolette Baker from FCDO, as well as Kavya Krishna, Beijing Leo Penny, Sonal Chindwadkar, and Sumati Rajput from the World Bank for their contributions towards this podcast. Thank you very much.